with wearing them, and I wear them all the time.
How many hats do you own?
Oh, last time I counted, I had like 55 or something like that.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. That was like 10 years ago, last time I counted.
Zena Haywood, thank you so much. And thank you to Gateway for all that you do. You guys are a credit to our community. And more than anyone, you bring our diverse community together. So thank you for doing that. God bless you, Zena. Have a good day. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. Go out there and practice some peace.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning, and welcome to WGTD's Community Matters. I'm Laura Sumner Kuhn, your host, and I'm delighted to have you here this morning as we explore the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in Zion, Illinois. I have with me Janaid Atif, who is the public affairs director for the local chapter of the community, and Daoud Ahmad, who is the moral and spiritual training secretary for the local community, which has members that span through northern Illinois and southeastern Wisconsin. And in fact, Daoud is from Racine. So welcome this morning.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much for hosting us and giving us an opportunity to talk a little bit about our community.
Great. Maybe, Janaid, perhaps you could start us off a little bit to explain to us. I understand that there is a new mosque that the community is building in Zion. Could you tell us a little bit about how that came to be and a little bit about the project?
Sure. Yeah. We're very excited. Our community has been in Zion, since 1984. So one of our members actually purchased a building there. It was the Booker T. Washington building, which was a community gathering mm-hmm. place with a long history of serving its community. Purchased that building, and our community hosted our activities there from that point up until today. And as the time was there, we built a great relationship with the community. You know, we tried to be involved as much as we can and be good partners in the community. And eventually we just wanted to expand our presence in Zion. So in 2015, we identified a piece of land, a 10-acre plot of land in Zion that we thought would be good for us to purchase and build our new mosque on. So at that point, we put a request forward to our national administration, identify the property, and got a request to actually build a mosque there. That was approved. So our local members came together and actually purchased the property. And then we went to the city council for the city council approval for having it zoned as a nonprofit status, and where we could actually build a purpose-built mosque on this location. And so that was a really interesting time, I think, for Zion. It's the first mosque to be built in Zion. We considered our previous location a mosque, but it wasn't a purpose-built mosque with the traditional, dome or minaret and things like that. So initially, there were some folks, I think, that were a little concerned. We had concerns about people's, thinking that we were going to be calling the azan from the mosque, and it would be disturbance in the area. And, you know, but luckily, you know, most of our community members knew us from the different activities that we held in the community, different interfaith activities, you know, social service activities. There was some overwhelming support for us in actually building the mosque. And, you know, gratefully, the then mayor of Zion, Al Hill, and the city council members went ahead and approved us to actually have this space. So we were really appreciative, you know, to the local community for their support. And it was a nice moment of collaboration, and really, I think, highlighted the good relationship that we've been honored to have in Zion. So from that point in 2015, up until today, it was just a matter of fundraising. The mosque ended up, the price tag is around $4.5 million, I believe. And, you know, so just raising money. How our organization does it is it's a national, this was considered a national event. So, you know, so there's different mosques that our community is building around the country. So each mosque has its own priority. And, you know, so there were mosques being built in Philadelphia and other places that first had priority. So that kind of pushed things back a little bit, you know, in the building of our mosque. But once those projects were done and full attention was then given to building our mosque here in Zion. And so, yes, just early this year, you know, ground was broken. And, you know, and so the building of the mosque has taken into full swing. And just a couple weeks ago, we held our foundation stone ceremony. And we invited members from, you know, city leaders, government leaders, you know, our general neighbors to come out and, you know, be part of this event. So, you know, we were blessed to have the mayor of Zion come and attend the foundation stone ceremony. Our state representative for our local area, Joyce Mason, came through, and she attended, as well as our Lake County Sheriff and Congressman Roger Krishnamurthy from the district that hosts our Glen Ellen Mosque, which is a Chicago suburb district. He also attended. So this was a national event. So we had members who came from all over the region, meaning Milwaukee and Chicago, but also nationally from, you know, from California to New Jersey to, you know, basically all over the country. So we ended up having about, I think the number ended up being around 250 to 300 folks came, some local guests, national dignitaries from our community, and government leaders from our local area. And the local leaders, they were able to actually lay foundation stones for this mosque. And it was a, you know, very nice event, and really appreciative for everyone who came out and joined us for the event. So so we're very excited. The mosque is scheduled to be done spring next year, God willing. And so, yeah, we're very excited. The project is moving along nicely. And yeah, so, you know, the community is looking forward to being able to, you know, do our regular business there and invite our guests and host everyone.
Well, that sounds wonderful. It's a pretty magnificent project, $4.5 million. And obviously it's long awaited that you've been just patiently awaiting this day since 2015. Daoud, you come from Racine to Zion to be with the community. Could you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with the Ahmadiyya Muslim community? And then as the moral and spiritual training secretary, could you tell us a little bit more about this Muslim community? I think that there are many people who aren't aware of your faith tradition and where it came from. So could you enlighten us a little bit?
All right. Yeah, this is Daoud. Just to kind of give a little background, like Janae had mentioned, we were able to purchase the Booker T. Washington building for our mosque / mission house in Zion in I think you said 1984. Prior to that, we did have a community here, a small community in Racine, and there was also a community in Waukegan, Illinois. And our Khalifa, who's the head of our particular Muslim community at that time, he felt that it would be more beneficial if he combined the two, the Waukegan community and the Racine community, because of the sizes and there were different issues going on. So he decided to join the two communities from Waukegan and Racine, and that's when we opened the Zion chapter. So that's why we have membership, you know, from Illinois all the way through Racine. On an individual level, I think I was about 16 years old when I accepted the religion of Islam. This was around 1990. And then in 1991, I was able to meet a brother that was in the Ahmadiyya Muslim community through my job. And, you know, he gave me the teachings. And then I was able to meet our current president, Abu Bakr. And I decided to join the community. And, you know, he took me under his wing. And I've been a member ever since. In terms of, you know, moral and spiritual training and what our community believes in, we the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. And we were founded in 1889 by Mirza Ghulam Ahmed. This was in Qadian, India. And he professed to be the Latter-day Messiah and a prophet of God. And in accordance with his teachings, like Janae was, when he was talking about the process we had to go through in order to get our mosque and get everything built, you know, there was a little pushback in terms of, and it happens across the nation when we, you know, go to build a mosque. There's pushback in terms of people not really knowing or understanding the religion of Islam, but it's a learning opportunity for us, and it's an opportunity for us to educate our neighbors. Basically what we believe in, you know, we believe in one God. We believe that we're here to worship God and we're here to serve our fellow man. We're about peace and we're about absolute justice. We don't condone terrorism. We've had several campaigns. For example, we have a Muslims for Peace campaign where, again, we promote peace with our neighbors, peace with our country, peace in the world. And we also have another campaign, Muslims for Loyalty. And one of the things that we are taught is that we should have love and loyalty to the country in which we live. So we should promote peace and loyalty. And, you know, the things that we do should promote elevating the society, you know, bringing peace and helping each other out, regardless of anyone else's faith. We don't try to push our faith on anyone. We're a totally 100% transparent community. And I think that's why we have successes in winning over any type of pushback that we have to building these mosques, you know, around the country and around the world. So
let me ask you, because I certainly don't know or need to stretch my understanding, and I'm sure some of our listeners are in the same situation. There are different sects of Islam, and what sorts of traditions do you share with all of Islam, and what might be distinctly different about your community?
Okay, again, this is Daoud. In terms of traditions, there are different sects, but they may differ on, it's small things that they differ on sometimes.
Okay.
So I think we may have.
Do you think we might have lost him
for a second? But just to finish up, where he was, where I think he was leading, how we see our community, or how the claim that the Mirza Ghulam Ahmed made was that his purpose was for the rejuvenation of the true Islam. So we don't feel like anything that we do is different from what the religion was that the Prophet Muhammad, the founder of Islam, presented. So we try to operate within the same guidelines that he presented. And we use his example and the teachings of the Quran to justify any of the actions that we take. So what we've seen in the majority Muslim world is that after the Prophet Muhammad came and delivered his message, and as new members came in from different cultures, different backgrounds, there were different trends and innovations that were added into the religion that began to create these schisms within the community. So one of the distinctive features of Islam is that there is one God, and we have a system called caliphate, or a spiritual leadership. So there's supposed to be only one imam for the entire Muslim community. So during the time of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, he of course was the leader while he was alive. And when he passed away, the Muslim communities selected one person to be their leader. And that person was to administer to the entire world of Islam. So to be a Muslim, you say that the word Islam means peace, and peace by submitting yourself to God's will. And when you call yourself a Muslim means one who submits himself to God's will. So there's this this theme of submission, of humility, of service that goes along with being a Muslim. And that's represented by following whoever it is that you elect to be your leader based on, you know, his good qualities. So that ability to maintain that unity is what has been challenging the Muslim world since after the first few caliphs or leaders were elected in the Muslim community. So with our version of Islam, or our when the promised Messiah, Mirza Ghulam Ahmed, when he made his claim to be a prophet and to be the person who is to reinstitute the true teachings of Islam, he started that trend of caliphate again, to where there's one leader who administers to the entire Muslim world. And it's based upon his interpretation of the Holy Quran, which we believe is the same interpretation that the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be upon him, introduced when Islam was established. So so that's the main, I think, the distinctive feature between us and the other Muslim communities, is that they do not have this singular international leadership. There's leaders, but a lot of times those leaders are based on national or political interests, and not on the interest of the entire Muslim community. And so we believe that this is a divine institution. And in the Quran, it says that, you know, this institution of caliphate, or of leadership, is something that God himself will establish and protect. So we see our ability to institute that that system of successorship as an indication of the truth of this message, and the support that we believe God provides to us as we try to implement the true teachings of Islam.
Thank you. Dawood, I think we had lost you momentarily, and I think you might be back. If you could explain to us a little bit about what your role as moral and spiritual training secretary is, how do you carry out the teachings of the Islam, and within the understanding of this specific community, in this area for us. Can you maybe elaborate?
Yeah, I can elaborate on that. So basically, my role as moral and spiritual training is just to make sure that the members are following the basics of the religion in terms of making sure that they understand the religion on a basic level. Things like making sure everyone's making prayer. Like, I can't go into people's houses and make sure that they're praying, but I can provide like means of them, you know, helping them out in terms of prayer, maybe learning the prayers or setting the prayer times at the mosque, making sure that people have the opportunity to congregate and make prayers together, because one of the biggest parts of our religion is the prayer. And within that, one of the biggest things is to pray as a community and congregation together, you know, to provide a spiritual connection with each other, making sure that people understand, you know, the month of Ramadan when we fast, just the basic teachings of the religion of Islam, providing the resources by which people can better practice the religion. You know, make sure that, as Janae mentioned, we have a Khalifa, our spiritual leader, making sure that people stay connected to our Khalifa and the Caliphate and basically the community as a whole, you know, on a spiritual level. You know, make sure that one of the biggest things that we do is working with our youth, you know, with all of the issues that goes on in the society, you know, making sure that they're on a straight path, stay away from the things that the religion teaches to stay away from, and participate in those things that the religion teaches us to participate in.
I'm going to take a minute here just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WGTD's Community Matters. I'm Laura Sumner Kuhn, and today we are talking with members of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in Zion, Illinois, which stretches from Zion and Northern Illinois up to Wisconsin and Racine. You know, you mentioned a little bit, Dawood, about prayer, and perhaps we shouldn't just assume that all of our listeners are familiar with the prayer ritual of Islam. Could you just talk a little bit about how many times a day, the call to prayer? Will the mosque have a call to prayer system mounted? Could you just talk a little bit about that with us?
Yes. In terms of the prayers, we have 5 daily prayers. One early morning, one basically a pre-dawn prayer, one early afternoon, one late afternoon, and then sunset prayer, and then a prayer later on in the night. So we have those 5 daily prayers. And again, one of the things that we stress is for our members to make our prayers in congregation together, whether that's in the home or at the mosque. In terms of the ritual, it's kind of hard to explain, but there are different positions to our prayers. We start off standing up, we bow. We have a position that's called sajda, which is a prostration. And we have a sitting up position. So there is a ritual to our prayer. And as far as the azan, at the mosque, we will have the azan call, but it won't be an external system. Like if you go to certain countries, primarily Muslim countries, and this may be where the confusion comes from with our neighbors, they'll have like a speaker on the outside of the mosque. And when they call the azan, it's loud so all the neighbors can hear. But again, these are Muslim countries. So it's a different, it's a different situation. We won't have that, but we will have the azan called, you know, inside of our mosque before each prayer. But it won't be something that'll disturb the neighbors or that something that can be heard outside.
Actually, it's really quite beautiful.
Yes, it is.
And I wish many people could experience it. I've had the pleasure of going to an Islamic country and hearing that all day long. And it really is a profound experience. You know, but as you mentioned, you're here, your community is here in the United States, which has a dominant Christian background, for good or for worse, or however it's lived out, right? And so there have been clashes worldwide between people who perhaps misuse either faith tradition. What have you encountered in your time since 1984, or since you've both been part of the community, in your interactions with other faiths, particularly the Christians who might be in the communities where you live and where you worship? What have you done, or what have you encountered and then done to help promote understanding between the two?
Yeah, this is Janaid, the chief speaking. You know, I've only been in Zion since 2001. I moved from New Jersey in 2001, and I was raised in the chapters there in New Jersey. I was first a northern New Jersey chapter, then a central New Jersey chapter. So I moved to Zion in 2001, and it was actually the Thursday after September 11th happened. And, you know, so that Tuesday, I can remember, you know, seeing the towers, you know, burning from, across the bay there in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. And, you know, just the tremendous shock of, you know, that event happening. So then I moved to Zion, and the chapter I was in New Jersey, just in general, I think at that time, people were not very interested in Islam. You know, just growing up, you know, we didn't see many Muslims around. It was just nothing that, you know, was on people's radar. But after 9/11 happened, everybody seemed to want to know about Islam, had opinion about Islam and about Muslims. And obviously, the opinion was pretty negative at that point. When I moved to Zion, the Zion community had established this relationship with the community around them, to where they showed who they were through practice. So a lot of the ideas that people seemed like they had about Islam, the local folks, the people who lived and knew the members of our community, they did not associate those actions or anything like that with our members in Zion. So there was a lot of, you know, messages of support and solidarity. I can remember that from when I first, moved into the area. And so I was really impressed with the cohesion of our chapter and the community around it. And it really helped me to be inspired to, you know, be involved more and really get engaged. And what happened with our national community at the time was that we saw this as an opportunity to inform people, because we saw that a lot of the anger that folks had against Islam was with the actions of Muslims, and it wasn't really with the religion of Islam. And so we saw it as an opportunity to kind of inform people of what Islam truly was, and to let them know that we're with them, that we are against terrorism of any kind, that we're against extremism, and we recognize that this is a problem that all religions face, of having folks who take elements of their religion and use that to radicalize their members and do it in a way that affects everyone. So what our community did at that point was came out with a campaign called Muslims for Peace. And so at that time, we would go around with flyers and, you know, go to our neighbors and, you know, just be out in, you know, street corners, you know, shopping malls. And, you know, just as Muslims representing Islam and telling people that this is, you know, what Islam really teaches. And I remember on the back of those flyers was a message, was the word terrorism with a circle and a slash going through it, because there is nothing in the Quran or in the life of the Prophet Muhammad that sanctions terrorism or killing anyone for faith. And then actually in the Quran, it says there is no compulsion in religion, meaning you cannot compulse anyone or force anyone to believe anything. You know, you can, at that point, all they do, they're only doing it to satisfy you, and they're not doing it for true belief. So that's no, there's no way that you can have true faith if it's been forced. So so the force, you know, the concept of a physical jihad to fight people because they're a different religion is un-Islamic. And so there's, you know, so we would do these campaigns to go around and let people know that, you know, we have a shared enemy in extremists. But, you know, our religion, if those extremists really understood their religion and followed their religion, they would see that the actions that they're perpetrating are actually against their religion, and they're acting un-Islamically. And we wanted to let folks know that they had allies within the Muslim community against the extremism that Muslims were taking. And then at the same time, we recognize that extremism is a byproduct of a lot of times of injustice. So there's so when you see these pockets of extremism pop up, there's a lot of times underlying causes behind this that have to be addressed also in order to have peace. And as Brother Daoud was mentioning earlier about the focus on absolute justice, this, you know, without justice, there cannot be peace. And that's just a true statement. So, you know, so we tried to create this, the community, you know, led by the Khalifa, who saw that this was the climate in the world. You know, we tried to reach out to our neighbors and let them know that there are solutions to this. And the solution is dialogue, is communication, is understanding each other, and realizing that we, all of these religions, are all branches from the same root, from the same tree. And the commonality seems to always be that we worship God and we take care of each other, of his creation. And as we had these conversations, we were able to build partnerships. And it seems like really after that 9/11 attack, that was the time when our partnerships and our community connections really blossomed, because it gave us an opportunity to go out and show people what true Islam truly was, and show people in practice who Muslims were. Because at the time, majority of Americans had knew what Islam was based on what they saw on TV, but had never actually had an opportunity to meet a Muslim. So we began all these campaigns called Meet a Muslim, and, you know, all these try to create all these different opportunities for people to actually engage with the Muslims in their community and hear our sides of the story and hear what Islam truly teaches about how you engage with folks from a different faith, or how you engage in times of conflict, and how you legislate, and how you treat people fairly in order to maintain the peace in society. And so the response was overwhelmingly good. And what grew out of that was a campaign called Muslims for Life, which happened on the 10-year anniversary of 9/11. And we had the goal of saving 10 times as many lives as were taken on September 11th. So between September, in a month between September 11th and November 11th, our national chapters throughout the nation went out and looked for partnerships with churches and civic groups and community groups. And, you know, we're at ballparks and, you know, all these different places to host these blood drives. So we had a partnership with Red Cross and a lot of the other blood collection agencies around the country, and were able to actually raise, it was over the number that we were looking for. So we were able to save. So the message was that, you know, by us unifying, you know, we can save many more lives than what these terrorists had taken from us in this event. And so it was a great show of community solidarity, of interfaith solidarity, of support that came out of such a tragic event. And I feel like that was, and it helped to really solidify a lot of relationships that we had locally and that our communities around the country have had, and really be the answer to what the terrorists were trying to do with that event, because they were hoping that that would create this clash between people of different faiths, different backgrounds, and it would generate this, you know, create this war that eventually would disrupt the status quo. And that obviously we believe is something that's totally counter to what Islam is. And so this effort was able to bring people, more people together than we believe it divided people, and give people the evidence of why Islam is not to blame for, you know, the actions of these wayward Muslims.
Thank you for that. Daoud, I understand that you also had been involved with the Racine Interfaith Coalition. Am I correct in that? And if so, could you tell us a little bit about your interaction here in the Racine area?
Yes, that's correct. We were involved with the Racine Interfaith Coalition. Again, as Janaid mentioned, one of the things that we're heavy on or big on is interfaith dialogue. So we do a lot of, we look for any opportunity to work with other communities, regardless of religion. One of the things we do, we hold like an All Prophets Day is a program that we hold in which we bring in leaders of other faiths, you know, Hindu, Sikh, Jewish community, Christian community, and we all just speak about the prophets of our communities, just to have an interfaith dialogue, not necessarily a debate or, you know, trying to convert anyone. So that's one of the things that we're big on is, you know, interfaith dialogue. And you had asked about, you know, interactions with other religious communities. And to be honest, in all of my years of being in this community, I've really had nothing but positive interactions with other communities. And I think that stems from the work that we do in the community. We're able to lay a foundation and show, you know, that we're sincere and we're about community. One of the things that we teach, you know, of course, is community, but it's that we represent Islam not by our words, but through our actions. So we can indirectly affect someone, someone's perception of Islam by the way we act. So, you know, we push our members to get involved in their local communities, whether it be on a school board or, you know, other civic organizations. So, you know, with that, like I said, my interactions have been nothing but positive in terms of interaction with other religious communities. And I think for the most part, our community as a whole, you know, we have positive interactions with other communities because of that. You know, some of the things that we do in or have done in Zion Inn and Racine, for the most part, of course, being our bases in Zion, most of our activities take place in Zion, but in Racine, you know, we do have members, so there's activities here. We've held, you know, Black History programs, we've held Muslim for Peace programs. We used to hold a lot of programs at the George Bray Neighborhood Center, but we also utilize the Racine Public Library in order to hold a lot of our programs. We've had Holy Quran exhibitions where we set up, we have a standing display that explains the Holy Quran, the religion of Islam, whatnot. And we just set it up in a public library and invite people to come in and have ask any questions. We had a program prior to COVID, it's called Coffee Cake in Islam, where we would do it. We've done it at the Racine Public Library. We've done the Zion Library at our mosque in Zion now. And what we do, we just get some refreshments, some coffee and cake, and we just sit there. We invite the public to come, and then they just ask any questions that they have about Islam. Again, I think one of the biggest advantages that we have as a community is our transparency. We're totally open and honest about who we are. And anything that we do, we invite our neighbors to. Anybody is welcome. And, you know, we're just a peace-loving community. And for us, we just feel like, you know, we're all in this together, regardless of our differences in faith. We put those to the side and we focus on our similarities, what we have in common, and how can we serve humanity, and how can we elevate humanity? You know, how can we bring peace to the world as opposed to bringing destruction? So.
Yeah, and just to add onto what Brother Dawood was saying, you know, this is, you know, we're just one chapter of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, and there's 63 chapters, I believe it is, from around the country. And then our community is hosted in basically every country generally in the world. And so this message is all started from, you know, our Khalifa, who kind of leads this effort. So he's so our headquarters, our community headquarters, are based in UK, in England. And from there, you know, our Khalifa has been, you know, hosted by different heads of state. You know, he's gone to different parliaments, you know, around the world, and has been an advocate for justice, for peace, for interfaith dialogue, for ending arms races, for, you know, ratcheting down the tension between nations. And so there's, you know, so his efforts have been amplified. We try to amplify his efforts through our local efforts and all the different chapters that we're part of. But and the results is, wherever you go in the world where you see Ahmadiyya Muslim community, the same engagement is happening with their neighbors. And that's one of the things that you know, is distinctive of our community, and I'm really pleased to be part of. You know, in the different places I've traveled, you see that the local people are having the same interactions with their neighbors, all because we have one message that we've all committed ourselves to trying to follow and trying to implement. And it's created this global effort, you know, for peace in all the neighborhoods in which our communities reside. And, you know, so just wanted to add that.
Thank you. We just have a few minutes left. I'm wondering if we can kind of circle back to the mosque itself. Obviously, it will be a place of worship. Are there other elements of the mosque that you're envisioning, and their use and what you're doing in the community that you'd like to share?
Yes, definitely. This is Junaid again. You know, so the main purpose of the mosque, of course, is worship. And, you know, we believe that all power, all efforts, everything will be realized through prayer and through God's grace.
We lost you a minute. I think you've mistaken.
I'm sorry.
There you go. That's all right.
So that's our main activity, and where our focus will go, and we hope, which will generate you know, success in whatever activities we're doing. And then, but beyond that, there's a museum that will kind of that will host some of our achievements and some of the history that we have there in Zion. You know, there's you know, that's maybe another story for another time, but there's actually history with our community there with in connection with the founder of the city of Zion. So there'll be some information relating to that there also, but it's a 10-acre lot. So we're looking at definitely expanding to, you know, creating opportunities for sporting events and things like that to happen. For the last 20 years, about 19 years before COVID hit, we'd hosted a 3-on-3 basketball tournament in Zion for the local, for the kids in the area, and was, you know, very successful for, you know, for many years. So we're hoping to continue that, and, you know, maybe we can host it there at that location, you know, once something like that is finished. But there's, you know, we have the space to do a lot of different things. We do food pantries right now in partnership with some of the local organizations through our through a humanitarian aid group that our community established called Humanity First. So that will be another outlet for services to be done, you know, for food pantries, for maybe clothing drives or other social services that, you know, that are needed all depending on what the need of the community is. So, you know, it's at this moment, the only project is the mosque, but, you know, with the land that's available to us, and, you know, with the spirit and drive of the people, I think that there's going to be a lot more done on that location. So stay tuned.
We certainly will.